Blog Talk Radio.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Sunday, March the 10th. As we like to do on Sundays, we'll be chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Lots to get into tonight, as always. The Democrats have a triple problem. I call it Pelosi's triple nightmare. These three congresswomen who I think are taking all the energy out of the room, all the oxygen, as they say, and they're making it very difficult for the Democrats to do anything because they seem to be the ones getting all of the attention. While this is going up, President Trump's approvals are actually going up. CNN has a lawsuit on their hands, and this is big, $250 million. That's a lot of money. The United States is energy independent. We'll be talking about that tonight with Bill. And Bill had a really interesting story this week about Governor DeSantis of Florida. And I've been hearing a lot of good things about this governor from my friends down in Florida. I think we could be looking at a potential President DeSantis down the road because of the importance of Florida in the Electoral College. Let me say hello to our friend Bill Katz. How are you, Bill?
Oh, just fine, Silvio. Miserable day here in New York, but
oh, really?
Unfortunately not too cold. Oh, it's just soaking rain and wet and gloopy and grim. I mean, it's almost as bad as Little Evita's portrayal of the United States.
Yes, well, and on top of everything, Bill, they changed the clock on you.
They did. And I must tell you and admit to the audience that I made the classic mistake last night. I started, we have a lot of clocks and watches, and not watches, but clocks around the house, and
mm-hmm.
I started changing them all dutifully, as I'm supposed to do before the hour comes, and realized at the end I had turned all of them in the wrong direction.
Oh, my goodness. So you actually went... You went spring back, right, rather than spring
That's
forward.
Right. That's
well,
right.
Bill,
and,
hopefully you'll be in the right direction on the show tonight, you know?
Right, yes. What day is
glad
it?
glad to see that. But, Bill, before, you know, there's so many stories to get into tonight, but I really wanted to start with this energy independent story that you wrote about. I think that's wonderful news. I mean, this should be the headline of the day. Not getting any publicity, but it should be the headline, Bill.
Well, it's sad that it's not getting publicity. You know, as you have said, they will not give Trump credit for anything. For anything. You know, it reminds me of on a different level, of when President Reagan ran for president, how so many in the press tried to portray him as a fool. You could go through the 1980 election with certain news sources and never even know that he had been governor of California. They wouldn't even discuss it. I mean, this is not a serious man. How could he be a serious man? He was a movie actor and is a warmed-over movie actor, and there are no retakes in the Oval Office. I remember all the phrases that we used. And, of course, later Ronald Reagan became not only a very serious president, but one of the great presidents of modern history. But it's almost a repeat. They just will not give him any credit, and I think it extends beyond Trump to the Republican Party. I was watching, and I know we're going to be discussing this, the reporting, if you want to call it that, of this resolution against hate that the
mm-hmm.
Democrats passed. Well, some. Number of Republicans voted against it, and it was portrayed by some of the less honest news outlets as they couldn't even support a resolution against hate, not telling us that the reason they voted against it was they didn't think it was strong enough.
Right.
And just that kind of cynical reporting. But you're right. I mean, this is a great moment that we are energy independent to a very large degree, that we will not be put in a box the way we were before, as we were in
mm-hmm.
the early 70s. that we cannot be influenced by that fear, and yet you'd never know what was happening.
No, you never know, and I think people who remember the gas lines and remember you know, the economic and political upheaval of having to depend on these Middle Eastern countries for energy. I mean, for me, it's a great victory. I think it's wonderful, but you have to wonder about the Europeans because they still depend on the Middle East for oil. They depend on Russia for oil, and so you have to wonder about them because they haven't done anything to be self-sufficient, Bill. They could be shut down in a heartbeat. I mean, if it wasn't for these aircraft carriers keeping the Strait of Hormuz open, I mean, Europe would be on its knees immediately, Bill.
Well, I think you're right. Europe is really, in a way, the Europe of the past in terms of its approach to policy. You see almost the same attitudes as before the Second World War. If only we can get to the next agreement, we'll be okay. And if only we can get some business, we'll have business with Iran and they'll be a completely different country. And you see that it doesn't really make that much difference. We had hoped also in opening China to the Western world, which President Nixon did, that all the commerce with China would change them. Well, it has certainly made them more powerful, and it has certainly made them more sensitive to international agreements. But it has also fueled an enormous arms expansion and defense expansion in China, which is not doing us any good. So, you know, these predictions that, you know, if only we can get to the next step, everything will be okay, very rarely work out. Europe, I have to tell you, I think more and more it looks like a kind of modern basket case. I think more and more it looks like a museum piece. Yes, they have some modern things, and yes, they do some modern research, but the mentality is old Europe, and I think that there's a really good chance that they will be marginalized as kind of an unimportant continent in not too many years.
Well, there's a story out of Europe that was fascinating. The government in Finland collapsed or resigned.
Yes.
And the reason is health care. Now, we've been hearing for years how wonderful their health care is. Well,
yes.
Now it turns out, I guess it isn't. Or maybe it is good, but they cannot fund it anymore because their population is so top-heavy, if you will. They just don't have enough babies, I guess, to put it bluntly.
That's right.
They don't have enough young people, so, I mean, they cannot afford all of this. And so the whole government had to resign. I thought that was, on one hand, it's laughable, but on the other hand, it's pretty sad, Bill.
Oh, it is. And this is, again, a result of the blinding light of socialism that comes into people's lives where they really do believe they're going to get a free lunch, that everything is going to be wonderful, people will get along, they will be singing Kumbaya or the Arab equivalent in just a few months, and it never works out. And Margaret Thatcher said it best, pretty soon you run out of other people's money. And you have these socialistic practices. I think there's a room for social policy. I think there's a room for a safety net. I think there's a room for some government participation in medicine. We do it through Medicare. Medicare actually works quite well, regular Medicare. But the fact of the matter is when you start expanding government policy, it means you're starting to expand government power and also government decision-making. And it's been pointed out by Friedrich Hayek, who wrote The Road to Serfdom, which was a critique of socialism. He warned about it. He said, nobody can have that amount of knowledge. In other words, if you turn the healthcare system over to Washington, who in Washington is going to know how to make decisions that are equitable in all 50 states? Nobody.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody has that knowledge.
No, and that's why the Founding Fathers created the system we have, because they understood.
Yes.
They understood that centralization wouldn't work for the benefit of all. You mentioned Europe, and I just wanted to say a couple of quick things before we get to our politics here. You look around the world this week, Bill, and you look at Prime Minister Trudeau in Canada in deep trouble, apparently. President Macron in France in deep trouble. Prime Minister May in deep trouble. And, I mean, I'm sure lots of others that we could name. It's just amazing to me when you look at the landscape, the one who is actually standing strongest right now is President Trump. Yes. And a year ago, they were all mocking Trump, yet now Trump is the one standing the tallest, Bill.
Yes, and they'll still continue to mock Trump. But my great fear is that there will be an economic downturn next year, and that there could be a real trauma among Western nations. If for example, Great Britain were to have as prime minister Jeremy Corbyn. Jeremy Corbyn is a Marxist. He's an anti-Semite. He is an America hater. And it is conceivable that he could become prime minister, and that would just be stunning, because it would stimulate that kind of thinking here. You have a Democratic Party that is going increasingly toward the extreme mm-hmm. left mm-hmm. and becoming crazy, and one of the sad aspects of it is a lot of the press is going along with it.
That's right. That's right. Well, the situation up in Canada is really interesting, because Trudeau has just had this scandal blow up around him, and he doesn't seem to know what to do. I mean, he doesn't have a clue of what to do.
Well, that's absolutely correct. And, you know, when he came to office, he is the son of, as we all know, Pierre Trudeau, who had been a prime minister of Canada, a leftist, somewhat anti-American. And when he came to office, people, well, here's a fresh face, he's young, he's dynamic, his family's been involved in politics. And at first, I have to say that many things he said seemed reasonable. I think he assured people he wasn't an extremist. And yet, one of the things he lacked was real experience, and that's showing up in the way you handle a scandal. Now, of course, mm-hmm. we all know how Donald Trump would handle a scandal. He'd say, what scandal? You know? Fake news. Listen to these
That's
guys,
right.
you know, I am fascinated just watching Trump, because you wonder what he's going to do in the year and a half before the 2020 election. This is going to be a brutal political year. I mean, it's already starting out that way, and you wonder how he's going to run. I assume he's going to run. Yes, actually he hasn't formally announced, but I assume he's going to run. How he is going to run. He has been lucky so far in his opponents. I think he may actually get luckier if the Democratic Party develops the way it is. But it is going to be a bruising battle between two parties that are way apart, way apart. The word mm-hmm. bipartisan has almost been forgotten.
Yes, I mean, there is no such thing anymore. It's almost like somebody deleted that word from the dictionary. You're right.
Yes.
Bipartisanship has completely gone out the window. Well, speaking of the Democrats, let's talk a little bit about these three ladies who seem to get all the attention these days in the Democrat Party. I mean, Nancy Pelosi has basically been pushed to the side. I don't know if
yes.
anybody even remembers who Nancy Pelosi is anymore. But you have these three ladies who seem to be taking all the oxygen in the room, Bill. You're Evita in New York, the lady up in Michigan, who we understand is going to present articles of impeachment against President
yes.
Trump very soon. And then you have the one up in Minnesota who, she's the reason for the resolution, but now she's going after President Obama and saying
yes.
things about President Obama. And then she says, well, I didn't say that, but then there's a recording of her saying it. This is incredible. These three ladies are taking all the attention, Bill.
They are. And, of course, remember, attention is a function of where the press wants to put the attention. And that we have such a weak press today, such an irresponsible and an aimless press today, that they get the publicity because they make the spectacular remarks. Now, the one in Minnesota made openly anti-Semitic remarks and did not get punished for it. This resolution they passed in response to what she said. Even Nancy Pelosi said, oh, it wasn't in response to her. It turned into one of these kitchen sink resolutions that condemned every type of hate that ever existed in history. I mean, if you hated your high school English teacher, you were mentioned. It was anything at all. So she wasn't punished. The little Evita from New York keeps on getting larger and larger crowds to spout stuff that is absolutely on a junior high school level. And the one in Michigan who questioned the patriotism of people who support Israel on election night wrapped herself physically in a Palestinian flag, not an American flag. And she and the one in Michigan are making a lot of noise and making terrible statements. and terrible statements not only about Israel, they're both Muslim, but terrible statements about the United States, about American
mm-hmm.
presidents. A little Evita from the Bronx, who was their leader, kind of, made it plain that she thought Reagan was a racist and set races against each other, which he certainly did not do.
Mm-hmm.
They are making comments about American history, and as you said, little Evita even... Excuse me, I have a cough, and I apologize to the audience. They're going, as you said, going after Ronald Reagan, and actually
mm-hmm.
that was Omar in Minnesota who went after Reagan,
right.
and going after Barack Obama. I mean,
mm-hmm.
for goodness sake, why would you want to go after Barack Obama in the Democratic Party? Now, this has a positive effect, I hope, and that it may wake up the Congressional Black Caucus, which has been supporting Omar, to the fact that she's not really one of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she doesn't have their same feelings. And when she begins to go after Obama and calling basically a fake or just a pretty
mm-hmm.
face, maybe it will wake a few people up in the party. I don't know.
Well, it may very well do that, Bill. But I was wondering, too, after she said that about President Obama, I was wondering how many Democrats maybe feel that way. Because, you know, for all the love of President Obama, there were a lot of liberals who were not really pleased with him. Because they didn't think he was, you know, that he didn't go far enough, I guess.
That's
and,
right. Oh, yes.
And so I'm just beginning to wonder, I mean, is she only speaking for herself? Because I think that there's probably a lot of liberals out there who probably agree with her, but no one had the courage before to say what she said, Bill.
Well, that may be true, or they said it privately within the party. And then we're discouraged from saying it publicly. But yes, I by the way, I wouldn't call them these people liberals. I call them leftists, which
yes,
is what
I
they
agree.
Really are. The press has difficulty with the word leftist. They keep. I mean, they would refer to Joseph Stalin as tilting toward the left.
a centrist with a leftist
yes,
orientation.
Yes.
That's
a
what
leftist
Stalin
orientation.
Was.
Yes, he has
yeah,
some
right.
revolutionary ideas. But at heart, he's just a good guy. You know, and they are deeply afraid of the word leftist. So they keep on referring to these people as liberals. But if you look at some of their platform, it's bad enough in domestic affairs when they want Medicare for all, which will wind up as a complete catastrophe. But it's always foreign affairs that I worry about because
mm-hmm.
the general consensus on the left is that America is not part of the solution. America is part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And if we begin to accept that, then we are finished as a nation. We really are.
Right.
And I'm afraid
no, that's
that
true.
Many kids are taught that in school today.
Oh, I agree with that. I agree with that. but one thing I wanted to say about this lady, you know, Evita from the Bronx, as you call her, she was down here in Texas. I didn't realize that she made those remarks down here at some
yes.
kind of a conference that many of the party candidates came down to, presidential candidates. And she actually referred to the United States as garbage.
Yes, what's
I
going
thought that
on
was
in
pretty
the
incredible.
United States today? Yeah. Well,
I don't know exactly
they're...
how she said it, but she used the word garbage, Bill.
Well, yes, she said what's going on in America today is
mm-hmm.
garbage. She also mocked moderates. She said that's not a real position. It is a position. In fact, it's really the default position of the United
mm-hmm.
States of America as a nation. The
mm-hmm.
the Constitution was set up as a moderate document, a document that has checks and balances so that we don't go off the deep end. Now,
mm-hmm.
she thinks going off the deep end is just grand because we're going to do all these things for people. And in the midst of it, she really hasn't come up with one answer. I mean, she
mm-hmm.
really sounds kind of like a high school student writing a paper for a left-wing teacher. And that's kind of what she is. And yet they listen to her. But we have seen this trend in the Democratic Party over the years, going increasingly to the left, increasingly to this idea that your identity is completely based on your race, gender, or ethnicity, that America is really a very bad place, and that we are responsible for most of the problems in the world. And yet the sad fact is that the American press softens that message when it delivers it to the American people, as they did with Obama. You know, for 8 years we had a president who never answered a series. Mm-hmm. They're going to do it, the press is going to do it again.
Well, they're certainly giving these three ladies a lot of publicity. And, I mean, the advantage that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has over the other two is that she's more telegenic. I mean, the other two are not. I mean, the lady up in Minnesota, I don't even know if she can talk. I mean, she almost seems kind of shy when she's
actually,
on television.
When she speaks beautifully. When she speaks.
Okay.
And she is also quite beautiful. The trouble is that there is something about her. You know, you get the feeling with Ocasio-Cortez that she's an airhead, but that she's a pleasant airhead. You get the feeling with Omar is that kind of that she has a knife behind her back. And the one in Michigan is impossible. I mean, she's just, I don't even know if she has ever visited her home state. She gets that, you get that feeling. You're quite right about Ocasio-Cortez. I've said many times, if she were not so attractive, nobody would care about her.
Right.
But she is one of these very charming, kind of bubbly personalities, very telegenic, and that is why the video press, at least, loves her. I think most people are probably on to her, that she doesn't know very much. But I say that one of the things I look forward to with dread for next year is the Democratic National Convention. I think it's going to be unlike any convention we've ever seen.
It could be the United Nations, actually.
That's right. Maybe they'll hold it in Moscow and be true to themselves.
It could be as bad as the United Nations. But one of the problems with Alexandra Evita, as you call her, is that she does seem to have some ethical problems. The one in Michigan as well, apparently. And she's not being challenged on any of those. The New York Post has been writing a lot of articles about her, but I don't know how much attention that's getting. But, you know, she had somebody on her campaign who apparently was allegedly taking money out of the campaign into some companies. She dresses very well. There's a lot of questions about her that I wish the press would actually would take them very seriously, Bill.
Well, I wish they would too, but I don't know if they will. But you know, the media has changed so much in my lifetime. I mean, I've listened to recordings made in the 1950s of CBS foreign correspondents who were brought back once a year to conduct a panel, first on radio and then later on television, giving their view of the year before, and it was so mature and so thoughtful compared to what we get today. What we get today is these kids who basically are kind of semi-entertainers. I mean, watching CNN is like watching a chat show. They chat for 24 hours, very little real reporting, very little real thought. And you kind of wonder where they get these people. It is not we don't have a serious journalism because we don't have a serious country. I mean, the country does not face the kind of existential threats it faced during World War II, and we don't have the kind of press that was brought up to deal with subjects like that. So what we have is what used to be called infotainment. It's kind of a combination of information and entertainment. And in dealing with Ocasio-Cortez, they're dealing basically with a rock star rather than with a serious politician.
Yeah, I mean, when she gets questions about how we're going to pay for all of this, she says, well, why worry about it? We're not going to be here in 12 years because of climate change or whatever. I mean, she seems to the questions and the answers the answers to the questions are so silly. But these ethical issues, I guarantee you, if she was a Republican young woman who supported Donald Trump, they'd be all over her, Bill.
That's absolutely correct. And, you know, again, it is not only the double standard, but the double standard on steroids, because you want to know, for example, where is he getting and where did she, as a candidate, get all the money for these outfits she wears? Mm-hmm. I mean, these are expensive outfits, and she travels expensively. And then she said, I can't even pay the rent in Washington, and now it turns out she lives in a luxury building. And then her mother was interviewed this week, saying that she left, Mama did, New York State. She doesn't live there anymore because the taxes were too high.
That's right.
You know, and here's her daughter talking about increasing taxes. I don't know if they talk to each other often or what the story is, but Ocasio-Cortez really believes she's a national figure. She would have been much better off coming to Congress and staying quiet for a while and learning.
Right. Well, but that's right. But, of course, you know, that's these three ladies apparently think that they're on a mission, you know, some kind
yes.
of a mission, you know, like in that movie, The Blues Brothers, you know, where they said they were on a mission from God. Well, these three think they're on a mission to change the country. And it's going to be interesting to watch them, because if the Republicans were to pick up the House in 2020, which I think, you know, that could happen, especially if the Democrats keep going crazy, what are these ladies going to do? They're not going to have the megaphone anymore. They're not going to get to ask a lot of questions and committee hearings. I wouldn't be surprised if they get out of politics altogether and pursue other interests, because I mean, they're getting all the attention now because of the Democrat majority bill.
Yes, well, that is absolutely correct. And if the Democrats lose next year and they go into the minority and they're held responsible for it, you're right. They may get a call from a William Morris agent saying, hey, how would you like to do a teenage film, you know, or something like that.
Or a show on MSNBC. That's what I keep coming back to, that the three of them will do a show on MSNBC. They'll just call it, the three girls from the left or something like that, and it'll be on MSNBC every night where each one gets to talk about the issues, something like that, Bill.
Well, that may very well happen. Look, they have already been on the cover of Rolling Stone?
Yes,
Rolling Stone,
right.
As being the future. This is the future. If this is the future, I'm going to the nearest airline counter and buying a ticket for Australia.
Right.
Because, and by the way, that is something that we really at some point should be discussing, because I believe that the ultimate result of a lot of what is happening today is going to be an out-migration from the United States. It's something I feared for a long time. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, people now move around much more easily than they used to. And if this continues, you're going to get a lot of the country's most successful and creative people just leaving. And,
that's right.
And
well,
saying,
they're already
you know,
leaving the so-called blue states.
Oh,
they're
absolutely.
Already leaving those. So, I mean, so we'll see what happens. Bill, let me take a little break, and then when we come back, we'll continue our conversation about the Democrats, 2020, President Trump, and a few other things. We'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. I just want to put in a good word here for my friend Carlos Guedes. We get to play his music on our show. Venezuela is a mess. They've been pretty much without lights for the last two or three nights in Caracas. I was talking to a friend here around town, and the problem is when the lights go out, they cannot talk to their families in Caracas. So, Bill, the situation down there is pretty sad. No lights means they cannot use the computer to Skype or whatever with their relatives in the United States. But, of course, the lady from Minnesota thinks that we're the problem in Venezuela, Bill. Did I get Bill? Did I lose Bill?
Hello?
Yeah, are you there, Bill? Did I lose you?
No.
No, I was just saying that the lady from Minnesota.
Yeah, I did hear you.
Yeah, the lady from Minnesota thinks that we're the problem in Venezuela, so that tells you a lot about them.
Yes, well, as I said a few minutes ago, people don't realize how anti-American these three are.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not, you know, it's all nonsense about, they're not patriots who are engaging in patriotic dissent. That's fine. I'm all for patriotic dissent. I'm all for policy discussions. These are people who don't like this country. And it's appalling. And in a way, Barack Obama didn't like his own country. And I think that what we're beginning to see in the Democratic Party is something we have seen over the years, and it's usually been defeated, but this time it may not be, and that is a resentment toward the fundamental values and institutions of the country. You know, when you start hearing again that the Constitution was written by dead white men, you'll know we're in trouble.
And that's right.
And I think you're going to hear that again.
That's right. Now, one of the points that I want to get your reaction to this, Bill, because there's at least three ladies are creating problems within the party, Bill.
Oh, they're creating tremendous problems for several reasons. One is the most important reason in Washington, which is they're affecting other people's careers. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
I say important not because it really is, but because they think it is. You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, when you have senior people who've been around a long time, who've developed expertise, who've become committee chairman, and these three little brats come in and say, and Ocasio-Cortez actually said, "I'm the boss." She actually used those words.
That's right.
And
right.
Someone is going to remind her that she's not. And I think Nancy Pelosi made a terrible mistake putting Omar, the Minnesota genius, on the Foreign Affairs Committee. That was done under pressure. And I think it was probably done from the Bernie Sanders wing. Bernie Sanders isn't even a Democrat, but he has great influence in the Democratic Party. I think we are in for a very, very, very traumatic time. I think that convention next year, you can almost see a huge Palestinian flag being marched across the floor. You know the way they do these slow marches, and
yes.
it's going to appall a lot of people, but it's going to tell you who's running the party. It's the far left, and I think there's even a chance that Bernie Sanders could get the nomination. I don't at this point. It's hard to handicap anybody, but Bernie Sanders is a real Marxist. There are now tapes of him in the 1980s. Praising Fidel Castro while cursing Ronald Reagan. I mean, he honeymooned in the Soviet Union, which is what we all know is a great honeymoon getaway.
That's right,
I mean,
that's right.
It was such a romantic place, you know?
Acapulco by the Kremlin, you know?
Yes, absolutely. and yet we have a population, and I don't think many people realize this, how bad the educational system is. The educational system no longer really teaches about the beauty of democracy. It no longer teaches about the Constitution. It teaches about how bad America is and how many problems we have. And now the chickens are coming home to roost. And there will be people who will say, well, you know, this is good. It's about time. But they don't understand. Ronald Reagan understood that freedom is not in our DNA. It has to be replenished. And I do fear... Now, Americans will not lose their freedoms, but they will just give them up gradually to this siren call of socialism.
Well, one of the problems that they're having, these three ladies are causing a lot of problems with some of the Democrats, many of them in senior leadership positions, who are pro-Israel. That is, you know, I know a lot of people are writing about, you know, how much longer, I mean, how can Jewish Americans continue to vote Democrat when you're hearing these kinds of statements? But, I mean, the reality is that, of course, not all of them. I mean, Jerry Alder, is that his name? The one from New York and some of these other Democrat congressmen. I mean, Adler, yeah. I mean, they're very strong pro-Israel, so they have to be very upset with these three women, Bill.
Yeah, absolutely. But the fact is that the three women are reflecting attitudes in some of their communities, and those communities do have a certain amount of power in the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party cannot win a national election without the black vote. That is, it is critical, and therefore the African-American political leaders have an inordinate amount of power within the party because they control that vote. Now, it's interesting that some of the people you don't hear in the Democratic Party, you hear very little from Hispanics.
Mm-hmm.
Very little. In fact, I think if you look at the public opinion polls, there is now quite a disparity between the black community and the Hispanic community on support for President Trump. And that President Trump has been gaining in the Hispanic community. Sometimes the disparity is really in double digits. Now, that was not something that was expected. And then you wonder what the Asian American community is really thinking. I think what may also happen down the the line that may actually save us as a nation is that minorities will not go lockstep together into the future. They will reflect their own talents and their own preferences, and they may not be the same.
Well, and that kind of ties up with what you wrote about Governor DeSantis down
yes.
in Florida, because here's a fairly new governor who has very strong approval. Now, he has always been very popular with the Cuban community, so
yes.
that I'm not surprised. And apparently he's now very popular with the Venezuelan community, becoming, in a sense, the new Cubans when it comes to politics, because they're also being very strongly Republican. So, I mean, he's able to win support from these minority groups. I think it's the economy, Bill. I really do. I think the economy is driving a lot of this support. With Hispanics, and I cautiously say this because it may be too early, but if President Trump makes an issue out of abortion, he may have
yes.
a lot more Hispanic support than the Democrats
yes.
realize.
Yes.
Because I've looked at these numbers over the years, and down here in Texas, when Wendy Davis ran, abortion was basically her issue, and she just fell flat with Hispanic women in Texas. And if Trump does it right, if he makes a big issue out of it, I think that could hurt the Democrats a great deal, particularly if you nominate a Democrat who says that you take the baby and you put him comfortable on the table until you decide what to do with it. That's just
yes.
that's an awful thing, and I don't know how in the world Hispanic women are going to support that. So abortion and the economy are the two issues, I think, that could bring a lot of Hispanics to President Trump, Bill. And then I go back to what I've always said about President Trump. Assuming he doesn't say anything stupid about Hispanics, like he did during the primary. I thought he made
yes.
some remarks during the primary that were completely unnecessary.
They were vulgar, and reflecting
yes.
a somewhat vulgar man. You're absolutely correct. And I fully agree with you. Look, when you look at the Republican bench, there are an awful lot of good Republicans ready to take over. When you realize that you've got Ron DeSantis in Florida, who I believe is Hispanic. Am I correct?
Well, I'm not sure if he is. I think it's Italian. The name is Italian,
oh.
I believe.
Yes.
But he does. He's got great ties with
yes.
The Hispanic community.
Well,
primarily with
himself,
the Cubans.
He can call himself Beto.
That's right.
Yes.
Well, what's his first name again? Ronald, right?
Ron.
Yeah, I mean, Beto might work. Why not? If it works for Robert Francis, I'm sure it works for Ronald.
Yes, but when you look at that and the fact that we ran a story this week at Urgent Agenda about the political actions that Nikki Haley is taking,
mm-hmm.
forming committees, working with organizations, she is getting ready for 2024. I suspect DeSantis is getting ready for 2024. It is quite possible that we could be approaching a time when the Republican Party will be the repository of great talent. There is the congressman, I think he's from Texas, Crenshaw, who you see
yes,
on television
yes,
more
right.
and more. He's a terrific guy. And
he sure
the
is.
party is filled with young talent. The Democratic Party, if you look at their presidential candidates, they all seem to be scared rabbits. They're afraid to say anything. I mean, if you
right.
say anything that Osorio Cortez or whatever disagrees with, you're immediately denounced as either a racist or somebody from the last generation. And I think that I'm very disappointed in Kamala Harris. I think that
yes.
I expected a little bit better of her than we've gotten, but all we've gotten so far is a candidate who will say anything to win. She's kind of the West Coast version of Kirsten Gillibrand, our senator here in New York, whose presidential hopes, I think, have pretty much evaporated because people want to know which Kirsten are we going to get, Monday's Kirsten or Tuesday's or Wednesday's or the one from 2008. I mean,
right.
this is a woman who has taken every position on every issue, so at least she knows the issues.
That's right. She knows what to say, for sure. Well, Kamala Harris, my disappointment with Kamala Harris is that she seems to be backing down from positions that she took
yes.
when she was enforcing the law as the Attorney General. I would be a lot more impressed with her if she would say, yes, I took those positions because I was the Attorney General and that was my job to enforce the law.
Yes.
I mean, that would make a lot more sense to me than for her to be dancing. The one thing going for her, though, Bill, that I think gives her or elevates her into a serious candidate is that California, I believe, is going to happen right away. So if she wins California, she's got a chunk of delegates for the convention.
And, of course, she will win California. Now, Kirsten Gillibrand, this is very interesting. Our New York senator, our second senator, the first being Chuck Schumer, as I've said very often about Kirsten Gillibrand, she could walk into any venue in New York and nobody would know who she is. I mean, she has had she's a very attractive woman.
Yes, she is.
But she has had absolutely no impact at all. And what I read this week from several sources is that she has not been able to convince one prominent New York Democrat to endorse her. That's not good. I mean, I don't know whose endorsement she'll get. Maybe the guy who runs Nathan's hot dogs. He'll be nice to her.
Well, he'll say that if anybody votes for her, they can get a free hot dog.
Yes,
like what happened when the Brooklyn Dodgers won the World Series, right? Didn't he give away
hot
dogs?
Yes, and now I think that the man to watch is Howard Schultz, who wants to run as an independent. But he did make a mealy-mouthed statement today saying that, well, he wouldn't do it if he thought it would help elect Trump. Well, of course it's going to help elect Trump, but he has to make the case. As a third-party candidate, I can make it. I don't know if he can make that case. He doesn't strike me politically as a strong person. He might be a very strong businessman. But we've seen with the mulling Mike Bloomberg until this week, and he stopped mulling and said he's not going to run. This is a guy who probably could have made an important contribution, but he became the Mario Cuomo of this year. Mario Cuomo, the former governor, late governor of New York, also mulled. He mulled. I think he mulled through three presidential elections, and he mulled until the day he died. And now he's not mulling anymore, unless maybe he's in heaven mulling, or maybe he's mulling whether to go to heaven. I don't know. I get so tired of these mullers, these people who announce that they're mulling. I'm mulling the possibility of running for president. You don't do that unless you have a movement already built that wants to draft you. You know, if you had, for example, a famous general or somebody who also was beloved by the country, and he said, you know, I'm thinking of running for office, then you would see this upsurge the next day, draft Eisenhower movement or something like that, and it would mean something. But for a guy whose main claim to fame is overpriced coffee to say, I'm mulling running for president, and he's still mulling months later, you come off as weak no matter what you do. And I think either get in or get out.
That's right. No, I think you're right about Schultz. I'm disappointed, too, that he's taken that posture because I think, you know, and we've said it before, I think an independent could actually win 2020.
Yes.
Because, you know, now, of course, this is assuming the Democrats don't do away with the Electoral College which there's some talk of that. But and the reason I said that about the Electoral College, because I can see a situation where nobody wins the majority of Electoral College, and it has to go to the House, where a Democrat majority could very well elect Howard Schultz whatever. I mean, so... But if Howard Schultz were to come out and say, look, I am a business person, I've built this business, I agree with you, the coffee is too expensive, but people like it apparently. But if he would make the case that he's from the center, he's not ideological, and he wants to govern and get things done, I can see a serious person like that, like Bloomberg, I can see them winning. In fact, they would completely eliminate the Democrat candidate out of the equation, and it would be between Schultz and Trump, Bill.
Yes, well, that is a strong possibility, but it takes a powerhouse to do it. Now, in 1992, Ross Perot ran as a third-party candidate. He was a terrible campaigner. He certainly didn't look like a president. He never really answered any question directly, and he got 20% of the vote. Now, if he can do that, then a more serious candidate can possibly pull it out. Now, nobody really thinks that way that a third-party candidate could win. But if a third-party candidate is well-financed and can get on the ballot in all 50 states, you never know what could happen.
Well, Schultz or Bloomberg would not have any trouble financing their own campaigns.
That's right.
And putting a staff in every state. I mean, they would be in every ballot in every state. They would have the money to do it. So, you know, I don't know. I'm disappointed. I thought Howard Schultz would be doing better, but it's early yet. It's early yet. By the way, we're all still waiting for Joe Biden to show up. Apparently he is going to show up. But as you always say on the show, Bill, somebody has to remind him there's an election coming up.
Yes. Biden is problematical. He is right now ahead of, ahead in the polls in some of the states. Because of name recognition.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody
sure.
knows who he is. He has a paper trail, though, that can come back and haunt him.
Yes.
Because you're dealing with a fanatical party now where everything must be in order, and he has made some comments, some ethnic comments in the past. He also has a tendency to engage in gaffes that are embarrassing. He is not the sharpest knife in the door, in the drawer, and he's old. I mean, he really isn't. In terms of a job that's as killing as that, he is actually not that much older than Trump, but Trump is much more dynamic. Now, no question about it. Yeah. Well, I think the Democrats have yet to come up with a candidate who can face Trump on a stage and win.
Mm-hmm. I agree, and that's the thing going for Trump. But you know, so far, there isn't one candidate who I can see beating Trump. To me, Trump, it comes down to the economy and whether or not he beats himself with some idiotic comment. I mean, he makes a stupid remark about this or that and turns off a particular segment of the population that, like I mentioned about the Hispanics before. He makes a stupid remark and then, you know, he doesn't get the Hispanic vote that he thought he was going to get, and we get Joe Biden. Like that. But unless, I mean, if he can show some discipline, the economy works for him, I think he will be reelected, Bill. Let me bring up a couple of points before we run out of time, because time always flies. Speaking of President Trump, his approval numbers are actually doing quite well. I mean, Rasmussen has him at 50%, I believe. Some of the Washington Post has him at 46. So he is right now exactly where President Obama was.
Yes.
Or even President Reagan or President Clinton. So, I mean, he's actually not that bad off, Bill.
No, he isn't. They love to refer to him as an unpopular president, but he's actually gaining in popularity. One of the things that really helped him, that got him on this, was delivering that excellent State of the Union message. I think it really showed a different side to him that we've been waiting to see. And he has not really made any gaffes since. If North Korea thing goes down, I think if he went out on the White House lawn and said, we are suspending our negotiations for a time, I will not accept just anything. It must be an agreement in the interest of the people of the United States, and we are not there yet. And we're not going to sign a piece of paper. I think
mm-hmm.
his approval rating would go up again. I think that Americans like that attitude. That's a very American attitude.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you. But, I mean, I'm amazed when you consider everything they've thrown at this guy.
Yes.
They have thrown everything in the kitchen sink, as they like to say, and he's still between 45 and 50%. My goodness. I mean, that, to me, is quite remarkable. Let me bring up another topic, Bill, because I'm starting to feel as if these young people from Kentucky are going to win this lawsuit. Now it's CNN is being sued for $250 million. Now, I have to confess, in the interest of full disclosure, I've never been crazy about these numbers, $250 million. I'm not exactly sure what that's supposed to mean because, I mean, I don't think there was any damage financially that was done to these kids, certainly not $250 million, at least that's my sense. But to me, it's not about the money. To me, it's about the principle that a young man like that, he's not a public figure, and he was not a public figure that day. He's become a public figure since, I agree, but not that day. And I think it wouldn't be a bad idea for the media to suffer a defeat here, Bill. Not so much about the money, but about the principle, Bill.
I agree. And as you know, I've been writing about that. The $250 million is a meaningless figure. They put those numbers in. But I do think it is time for the media to get slapped, that you can't just destroy reputations because you feel like it or because it's the order of the day. And when you compare the way they treated this young man from the Catholic high school and the way they treated this actor in Chicago, whose story was suspicious right from the first minute, but the national press ran with it. This is America in 2019. The local press in Chicago, I'm talking about the Jossie Smollett story, the local press got it right. They were suspicious from the first minute because these things were all supposed to have taken place in 10-degree cold. So we had the
right.
image of a bunch of muggers running around in 10-degree cold looking for somebody's
right.
mug.
Right.
You know,
right.
I mean, these guys like to be warm also. And it didn't come together, but the national press just went whole hog left wing, and now they're all trying to make excuses for themselves. I believe it's time to give the press a rap on the knuckles.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't respond,
well, that's what I mean, and that's why I was saying the money itself. You know, I don't know what it means. $250 million. It sounds pretty crazy to me. That figure, I'm not sure that's really necessary, but I don't care if they win $10,000. I don't think the family cares whether it's $10,000. I really don't. I think they just want to teach a lesson to these reporters. I thought they were so irresponsible with this young man, Bill. And
oh, yes.
There's got to be lots and lots of parents out there who said that could have been my son, easily.
Oh,
could have been my son.
That's absolutely true, and I think that's also what happened after the Judge Kavanaugh hearing. People said
yes.
that could have been my father, you know, being treated that way. So yes, I think the press, the trouble with the press is it's going to double down. They're not going to reform. They had appointed this woman as the political director of coverage. This is CNN I'm now referring to, coverage of the 2020 election, and she came from the Trump administration, and now she's out. There was too much pressure from the political left, so now she's been reduced to an analyst. And somebody else will arrange the coverage. I mean, the press is militant. People do not understand how fanatical the left becomes. They
That's right.
just become crazy. And you must have this, you must have that. I mean, we now have states that are passing late-term abortion laws that include permission for late-term abortion. And I don't know of any Democratic candidate who's actually come out against it.
That's it, and that's another question. But you better believe Trump is going to force him to answer that
question
the presidential election. Like, that's the one thing about Trump. You know, he's going to fight like we have not seen a Republican fight ever for the position. Bill, looking ahead to next week, any issue that you're going to be keeping your eye on? We didn't talk about North Korea and other foreign policy issues, but anything that you're going to be keeping an eye on next week?
I think it's next week is a continuation of what we've seen. The budget is coming up for discussion, the federal budget, in which the president is going to ask for a lot of money for the wall, which he will probably not get, and there will be a battle over that. The future of the Democratic Party, I really
yes.
think this is one of the worst crises I've ever seen a party face, because the people causing the crisis are not backing down. And we have to remember that the Democratic Party split in 1948 and the Southern Wing walked out. And these left-wing crazies can walk out as well or can threaten the party to the point where they can walk out. I would not be surprised if some of the nutcases started mounting a challenge to remove Nancy Pelosi as Speaker of the House. It would not shock me at all. These are fanatics. And it's dangerous.
Well, Nancy Pelosi has not looked real good either. You know, she hasn't looked that good. And I was thinking that to follow up on what you said about the party breaking up, here's a crazy idea. Bernie Sanders doesn't get the nomination, but he still has a bunch of supporters and lots of money. He didn't run as a third party in 2016, even though the Green Party wanted to nominate him. Bernie Sanders could run as an independent. He is an independent. He could run as an independent and probably get 20 or 25% of the vote, Bill.
Yes. He would destroy the Democratic Party.
Oh, sure.
Yes.
That's
but,
true.
But my feeling is I've asked repeatedly, as you know, an urgent agenda. Where is the excitement over the possibility of a new center-left party that's responsible, that can attract
mm-hmm.
people from both parties. And you would think somebody would have thought of that by now and tried it. But it doesn't look as if it's going to happen. I very rarely favor third parties, but I think now we are ready for one.
Well, you have these new governors who've come in, the governor of Colorado, the governor of Washington. And I said to myself, well, a governor may not be a bad candidate because he is a governor. And, you know, governors have to make real world choices. But so far, they don't sound any different than all the others. It's all about climate change. So, they haven't come up with anybody who's, I mean, I have not heard a single one who dissents from the rest of them. Now, Joaquin Castro said something today that was pretty incredible. He said that Bernie Sanders wants to write everybody a big check except reparations. Talk about an issue that the whole country is really supporting, reparations bill.
Yes. So now Joaquin is coming out in favor of reparations?
Yeah, he wants reparations. He's saying that Bernie Sanders doesn't support reparations.
Right.
I guess
that's
how he's hoping to go up in the ratings. Castro.
What a mess! If this country ever tried to do, after all the tens of billions and hundreds of billions we've spent on social programs, to say but reparations are still needed. It will divide this country in ways it has never been divided before.
Oh, I agree, and I'm not sure Black Americans are in favor of it, Bill.
No, I don't think they are, because they know the backlash that it will cause, and I certainly don't think the other minorities who are expected to walk off together in lockstep with Black America would support it. I don't know of any support it's getting from Hispanics.
No, I think that reparations is like bringing down statues. I think it's very popular in the leadership level, but I don't think it's popular. I mean, here in Dallas, we're taking down statues, but the only people who want to take them down are the leaders of the Democrat Party. I don't see any marches. I don't see any support for it in the Black population. I think they're more interested in public schools, Bill.
I certainly hope so and think so.
Yes. Well, as always, Bill, thank you for your time, and keep up the great work at Urgent Agenda. And I guess they changed the clock on us today, so are we an hour earlier or an hour later? I forgot.
Let's see.
Because right now
I finally got it right. We moved the clock ahead. So we lost an hour of sleep last night, but we're getting an hour of daylight.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, because I look outside. No, it's dark outside. I guess it's dark outside, but anyway. Well, thank you so much, Bill. Thank you for your time, and I look forward to our next time next Sunday.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it always, Sylvia.
Thank you very much. Have a wonderful week. Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We went through a bunch of issues today, but I think Bill is exactly right about the Democrats. They are in deep trouble as a party. I mean, these issues that are all this infighting over this and this and that, they're not, you know, where are the moderates? These poor moderates who ran to get something done, they're being just left out. They can't get anything done because they can't get past these three ladies from the left. What a mess. What a mess for Nancy Pelosi. Good night, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.